you have ever hired fast because you were desperate, or you had somebody walk out on you and leave you scrambling, or your leads have disappeared, maybe you figured you're a little too intense for your team, you need to stick around. I'm talking with Toni Vanderhayden, who is a rainmaker of a huge team outside Chicago, and she is sharing the 5 leverage mistakes that she's made and you may have made too. And by the end, you'll know exactly how to fix those things so you can protect your profit, your people, and your time. Everybody, what's going on? It's your friend James Shaw. Thank you so much for choosing to be here and hang out with us. We're doing what we do, which is talk to elite people who are doing elite things. I'm pumped for this one because Toni sells a handful of houses and she runs a pretty successful business. And we're going to learn a lot about leverage in a market that's kind of wonky and weird. And so, Toni, thanks for joining us. Would you introduce yourself to everyone? Tell them who you are and where you are and a little bit about your business.
Sure. I am Toni Vanderhayden. And I am operating principal of Keller Williams Realty Signature right along the state line of Illinois and Wisconsin. So we are in Loves Park, Illinois. We've got offices in Galena, Illinois, which is a resort town, Loves Park, up into Wisconsin. We've got an office in Beloit, Wisconsin, and Janesville, Wisconsin. And I also lead a team of real estate agents that operate in both states as well.
And you guys are selling stuff at a high level. This is an MREA team that... Gosh, you guys will do what, almost 300 units this year or something like that?
Yeah, our top was 364 was the most that we've ever sold so far.
Yeah.
Yep. So this year, the market has shifted a little bit. People aren't as excited to be putting their home on the market. So it's going to be a little less this year.
Yeah, that's all right. It's, you know, one year doesn't make a career. And still, though, you run a awesome business, which is great. Following the MREA model, you're a believer in that as an OP.
Yes, I am.
And as an agent and a rainmaker. And so today we want to talk about, it's like the 5 leverage mistakes that people make that you've learned from your own experience, because you know, leverage is an important tool for us. And you first had to kind of figure out what to leverage. So before we get into the mistakes, give us this idea of how an agent even knows what to leverage and when to do it.
So what I recommend people do is to calculate what your dollar per hour value is. And when you figure that out, then anything that doesn't match that needs to be leveraged to high talent. And you need to never do that again.
Stuff you don't like, and it really isn't making you money.
Yeah. For example,
got to come off the plate.
I'll tell you, last night at my market center, I planted mums. My husband was like, "Are you freaking kidding me? You've got people to do that." And I said, "But actually, it brought me joy."
That's right.
But I did it after my working hours. I was out here at 8 o'clock at night planting mums, and it just looks beautiful. And I get to see this every day. That's something I didn't leverage, but that was by choice. And he goes, "You need to leverage more." I said, "Really? Tell me an area where I'm not leveraged." And he goes, "You're right. You're leveraged."
You're going to leverage him out of date night if he's not.
You're
careful.
Darn right. In fact, he told me that once. He goes, "Don't leverage me." I said, "Listen, you need to be on my calendar so you exist."
That's right. Yeah. Well, you've grown the team. Will you tell us a little bit about the makeup of it so that we can kind of understand how you're set up as well?
Yeah. So I developed it just like the MREA. It was myself. And then I brought on an admin. And she was fantastic. So she took care of both transaction coordination and marketing. And then we brought on a buyer agent. And that was a wildly profitable model right there. Yet, because we followed the model, we got more and more business. So then we brought on a second buyer's agent. And then after that, that's when we brought on a transaction coordinator, second buyer's agent. And then I moved out of the role as lead listing specialist. We brought on an inside sales agent, which I know we're going to talk about that, which I think is vital. Yeah. And then I replaced myself with Josiah, who's our lead listing specialist. And now we also have, you met my executive assistant, Spencer. So that also helps with leverage. So I have right now, I've got one marketing, a transaction coordinator and a half, an inside sales agent, and a tech guy. That's my core. And I like to match how many are in office with how many that are outside of office. So because Josiah is going to be moving on and building houses, I brought in his replacement. So I, right now I'm operating with 2 listing agents, 2 buyer agents. And normally for Josiah's talent, I could probably pull 3 buyer agents to his 1 listing.
That's amazing. You have, it's been a journey for you, and different markets maybe require different things. And, and certainly in the Midwest, the market's still pretty tight and, you know, inventory is still pretty low and there's multiple offers, but it is changing. Inventory is up and different things are happening, and you've been around. This is not a new thing for you. So you've experienced different types of markets. I'm curious what leverage advice you would give to agents that are experiencing changing, shifting, evolving markets, because I imagine that kind of dictates what the leverage looks like too.
Yeah. Two things I'll say is, Gary Keller came out. I learned you just need to forgive my frankness, shut up and listen. Whatever the guy's saying is really going to happen. So a couple of years ago, he's like, you better be tightening your belts because the market's going to be shifting. And sure enough, it did. And I said, oh no, I said to my accountant, we're just going to, we'll just blow our way through here and we'll take our unfair share, which is a fun idea, but you can't sell umbrellas when it's not raining. And when people have a 2% or a 2.5% mortgage, they're just not wanting to sell. So aside from building houses, which I jumped into, cause I got tired of people not wanting to sell their house. You need to make some big decisions. And because I didn't listen, I ate that year because everyone got paid but me. And I learned a really good vital lesson. Just shut up and listen to Gary Keller. When he says that you need to tweak your staff, you need to tweak your staff. So that's one side of it when you have to retract. And that's a tough thing to do when you're a leader is because all of these people are relationships. They're not employees, they're relationships. And that was hard. So learned that lesson, moved on. And now we're talking about growth. I always liken growth to driving a stick shift. And I don't know how many people drive a stick shift anymore, but if you can listen to your transition and when your transition shifts from first gear to second gear, it sort of winds a little. Well, that's what you're going to do when you realize you need to add more leverage. You sort of whine. And once you add that leverage, well, then it's the same thing as going from first to second gear. You sort of stall a little bit. You don't have as much power. Well, that's the time it takes to train that person to get them up to speed. Then you finally hit that higher speed at that second level and you just keep it incrementally growing that way. You just have to put up with a little bit of stalls and then the high turning of that engine when everyone's doing more than what they really ought to be doing on a team.
Sounds like you ought to be flexible in as the market's changing, right? That you just have to be prepared to shift through some stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. You've learned some things over the years. You gave me 5 mistakes that agents can make when it comes to leverage. I want to go through them.
Sure.
And the first one you talked about is just making sure we got the right person in the right role. This is not a new idea, but it's one that many rainmakers struggled with. I've struggled with it in my organization. It's a common thing. But let's make sure we got them in the right seat.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you want to talk about? That's
I want you to talk about that as a mistake. Like, what do we need to look at to make sure we got the right person in the right seat on the bus?
Yeah. I would say hold tenaciously to the career visioning process. I literally have a sheet of steps to hire and how long it takes to go through each step. And you are really giving the career visioning system a disservice if you don't do every single section of it. There's a reason for it. For example, you can look at a KPA, but I've hired off that KPA. I don't know about you, James, but I hired on an MCA that have 5 ones on the KPA. The guy was brilliant, but his history, I didn't pay enough attention with the history. He just could not handle the leadership and the weight of that position when other people do that just fine. So you don't want to just hire out the KPA. One section that has really revealed a lot to me is when you do a future employee's history, because even if they don't KPA well, but you look at their history and they have a succession of wins, job after job after job, then that is very, very telling as well. So I would do all of them.
Yeah, the KPA, for those that don't know, is a behavioral assessment that you can take. It's a Keller Williams piece, and you go and look at certain behaviors. What are your natural behaviors? And then KW has the data to know, based on all these different roles, what might be a fit. It's a common mistake. You might remember, Tony, before the KPA, we had the AVA. You might remember that. It was a tool. Yeah. And I remember one time I was interviewing for a team leader position, and I was told that they could not hire me for the team leader because my AVA did not match. the and it was just I was in the range for all of it, 7715. And I didn't
still remember the number.
I do. I'm an 8912, but the team leader's a 7715. And so they told me that they wouldn't hire me because I wasn't a 7715. I was an 8912. And don't worry about all the minutiae of this, those of you listening, but just know that person would not hire me. Tony, I was a damn good team leader for 8 years.
You were.
and grew two market centers, doubled, almost doubled the size of one of them. And I think that OP would hire me today if I wanted to be a team leader again. So we have to be careful of getting wrapped into one part of it. That's what you're saying is if you're going to follow the process. Is that right?
The entire process, because everything has a different lens on that person. And lean hard on that group interview too. I just talked to my MCA and my TL and I was like, you know what? I'm toying around with bringing this person in. And in unity, they were like, no, we don't like her. I was like, okay, I'm listening to you.
Yeah, that's good. Well, you value your team.
100%.
When you make a mistake in hiring, which you've done, I've done, everybody's done, that can get really expensive.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah.
Yeah. And just having those conversations, I would really recommend everyone understand and use Susan Scott's book, Fierce Conversations, and just hire slow. And go through the expectation sheets. This is what I'm expecting for this level of pay. So I would just hire slow and have that expectation. And then I am always fair. I am always fair because if someone's not meeting expectations, I believe they deserve education. I believe that they deserve that in writing. And I believe that they deserve that with your support to try to help them through it. Yep. So I'll do that twice. I'll have a sit down and say, listen, this is what we want. This is what you're doing. Here's the disconnect. Let's try this again. I'll do that twice, right? And they might be separated. Those visits might be separated by 4 months or 6 months, right? I want to give them enough time to really correct that behavior or whatever that might be. And of course, all the education is being provided to that individual as well. If I have to have a third conversation, it's because it's a choice. They've made a choice and I can't live with that choice. So we're going to have to part ways.
Yeah. Mistake number two, which comes to the parting ways part. Mistake number two is you don't have a backup. That's what you told us, that you don't have someone that can cover when there is a change on the team. Tell us about what happened with you there and what we could learn from that.
So I have redundancy, especially in my Keller Williams franchise in the, I call it the money side, right? The defense side is I had three backups to my MCA because I never want to be left in my unawares there. So on my side though, I run four LLCs for different things that I do. And I had one accountant and gosh, darn it. I brought this guy up from a kid, right? My business partner, I put him through his master's in accountancy. Well, he decided to fall in love with a girl that started a different brokerage. And it was a Monday. And he said, I'm gone on Friday. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I said, you know more about me than my own medical doctor. You're running four of my LLCs and you're leaving with a 4-day notice, which in Illinois is okay. It's an at-will state. But I'm still reeling from that one. I just figured he would never leave.
Right.
And he had a great position and he's going to regret leaving. I guarantee you that. But nonetheless, he is helping me go to hire other people. And I was telling my husband, I said, I will never, ever lean on one person, especially when it comes to money. But on my team, everyone is doubly trained. So if someone is out for being sick or if someone is out because they just weren't playing by the rules and they need to be let go, we can cover until we hire another one.
It's really smart. So figure out where those opportunities are to cross
Screen
and just be ready. It's really
redundancy.
Big. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mistake number three, you said, and you say, by the way, this is one of the top mistakes that rainmakers make. And that not having an
inside sale. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah. Not having inside sales, not having an ISA. Talk to us about that one.
You know, I've run into other pretty big teams that they don't have inside sales. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Here's the reason why. Okay. Now remember, I'm an agent. So I'm in the back of Walmart, Target, whatever. And you know, those great big metal buildings, you don't get really good connections. And somebody calls in and they want to list their house or buy a house or whatever. And you're writing feverishly on anything you can find, right? In fact, I have a note on my hand right now. that lead's going to be lost. And especially you're the leader of the team. You know darn right that you wrote a lead on the back of a receipt and you have no idea where that receipt went. But what happens when you've got buyer agents that are receiving leads? And I ask Rainmakers, I'm like, are you 100% positive that every single lead has been secured and that you know where they are right now? Well, my ISA does that. She is like a shepherd dog. She is running around nipping at their heels saying, update your notes in our CRM. I want to know what's going on, because she, of course, is getting bonused on these things actually closing. So it's a perfect relationship where you've got an agent going a million miles a minute, forgetting to put notes. And then you have somebody back in the office saying, I want the notes. I want the notes right now. And I want to know when I'm going to get paid. But it's a friendly banter, right? It's not like anyone's ticked off with anybody. But I bonus her for landing any lead that's 8 days or longer. We call that deep ocean leads, meaning they are bye-byes, right? Probably some other agent picked them up. If she can resurrect a deep ocean lead, she gets a hefty bonus for that just because it's fun, right? We won.
I love that. You know, yep. You and I met 20 plus years ago when I joined Keller Williams working for Jana Caudill in Northwest Indiana in Crown Point. Right. And one of my roles in there was a role like that. And that was the year that she went from 1.1 million in GCI to 2.3 million in GCI. And I joke with her all the time. Look what you did. You put me in a role to track the leads and it made you an extra $1 million.
Right.
It didn't. That wasn't the reason, but it's just some fun I have with her. But one thing we did in that, Tony, was every week I met with all the agents on the team, not as a way to be mean to them.
No.
They didn't always like it to start, by the way. But once that we got rolling, they liked it. To find out who are you working with and how can we help you? And we would take the ones back that weren't right now business so they could focus on showing houses and writing offers and doing buyer consultations.
Yeah,
we could manage all the rest of the leads for them. And then as those people were ready, we could give them back. And that's what you're talking about. It only actually helps when you have someone who's got their eye on the lead and where it is in the pipeline, right?
Yeah. And plus that individual is taking time and treating that client like they deserve to be treated,
right?
With care. They're delving into why are we buying or why are we selling? Who's in the family? How can we take care of you? Do you have dogs? Are you looking to get, you know, into a certain school system or whatever it might be that they need? That's the person that's taking the time, and you're not picking up the leads when you're in the backside of Target buying cereal. You know, I mean, it is. And plus, it really frees up the Rainmaker to go and do what your 20% is. Because frankly, when I go to the doctors, like, for example, I had my shoulder redone. I literally timed how long it took to get through that entire process. And the time I spent with my doctor might have been 10 minutes, but I spent and was taking care of the front desk person, nurse number one, nurse number two. It's the same thing on a team, and your clients deserve to be treated that way. And bring in an ISA, because you sure don't want to lose money. You know what, James? How much money are you losing if you don't have an ISA? That's what I want to know.
If you're a solo agent watching this, what you need to think about is, what is your follow-up plan until you can get to that spot where you can bring someone like that in and have a system for it?
Well, you know, and have a playbook too. This is what I do. This is the questions I ask. This is what my expectations are to treat them. And so it's just seamless, right?
Yep. Mistake number four. This is really good. We forget as a rainmaker that not everyone on the team thinks the same way we do.
Yeah.
And that can create some challenges on how we communicate and interact with one another. Will you talk about that?
Yeah. In fact, I was just coaching someone this morning. I do a leadership forum class and I invite the community, right, to come in. And I was just talking to a girl who has a tremendous leader in capacity, but the leader doesn't have any emotional quotient, no emotional intelligence at all. And this poor girl felt that she was being overlooked. She wasn't being taken care of. And I said, man, that I'll tell you what, I spent a lot of money with a really great coach from the John Maxwell Group who taught me that my driving competitive behavior style is fantastic for sales. But he said, I bet you, and I'm being super transparent. He said, I bet you have a lot of dead bodies in your wake. Mm-hmm. And I was like, gosh, darn it. I do. I need help. Please help me. And I spent 3 years coaching with him. He said, I graduated. I said, I have not. I said, I'm still going to hire you. And to this day, I still talk to him once a quarter because that behavior style that makes you a tremendous leader can also really harm the people that you actually care about. And I know you don't do it on purpose, but you have to let them tell you where you're really messing up.
Yeah.
And that's why people on my team have been with me for, like I said, 11, 12, 13, 14 years. Because I chose to do that. I chose to be more sensitive.
Tell me how you create a culture where the people on the team can be honest and transparent about how they feel and what it's like to work there. Because a lot of times we'll have people that they may be, you know, I don't know all the people in your team. I don't know your director of ops. I don't know your transaction coordinator. I don't know them. But my guess would be is mm-hmm. that they might have a behavior that tends to keep some of that in. They're slower to change. They're less yeah. willing to tell you how they're feeling, and they're going to hold on to it. Where you, people always know how you feel, Tony. That's very transparent. Yeah. So how do you create a culture where that person who is a little bit more reserved mm-hmm. feels comfortable enough to share with you, hey, here's what's going on and here's what I'm feeling?
Yeah. First of all, anyone on your staff or a strong listing agent, a strong team leader is going to be your direct opposite. Get over it. They're going to be on the DISC profile, D-I-S-C. Look that up. It's a fantastic measurement of people and how they operate. They're going to be an S and a C, which means they're safe, sound, secure. They're calculating. They're going to move slow. And the reason why is because they're always right. They're always right. So having a rainmaker operate seamlessly with people in that behavior style, first you have to acknowledge that and praise it openly. You sort of have to sacrifice yourself and say, y'all know I'm not a detail person, so you have to save me. So you really have to promote who they are and then actually take the time to ask them. And I asked my coach, just say it one more time. I got to write this down what you're telling me to say. And this was crucial. He said to me, listen, I don't think I have all the answers about this one particular situation. And I'm wondering if you could help, right? So just those words really open up the forum for everyone to chime in. Literally, one of my staff just came in here and I asked her a question and she typical to herself said, okay. And then she left and I said, time out, yeah. No's an okay answer. I need you to tell me if you don't think this is a good idea, because we're not going to do it unless you think it's a good idea. She goes, no, I think it's a good idea. So I think promoting.
But at least you double check. You have enough awareness to just go check on that stuff.
Yeah. Right. And here's another thing I'd really recommend is whatever behavior style someone's using as far as assessments going. Like, for example, we use the Keller personality assessment. I think a busy rainmaker needs to revisit that at least once a year. And I'm going to recommend if you're a great leader, you're going to read that once a quarter, because it tells you the environment that person needs. It tells you what kind of supervisor you need to be that person. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, anybody can sell a dang house or buy a dang house, but yeah. not everybody can lead well. And yeah. you need to be very intentional about making your environment a safe place for these people to succeed.
Well, that goes right into number five. Number five says, you know their behavior. You need to, the mistake we make is we don't revisit it and we don't create an environment that they can thrive in. So how do we do that? How do we create an environment that our whole team can really succeed, knowing that we all think and behave differently?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to realize that nobody ever achieves anything alone. And if you can embrace that, then the next easy step is to realize I need others to come with me, because with them, I am actually a whole person, right? So as far as that environment goes, first of all, know who your people are. Second of all, revisit that and make sure, here's a good example. So when my husband talked me into getting into real estate, because it clearly was not my idea. And he said, listen, I'll help you out. I'll get my license too. In regards to, where am I going? I sort of lost my track because I was thinking about
your husband was in real estate. Yeah.
So I'm like super, super busy. And I didn't realize this until he told me one day. He goes, do you realize every time you call me, you have something for me to do? And I was like, dang it, that's not really what I intended. So because it wasn't natural, I literally put an alarm on my phone to call him and just ask him how his day was. And he'd be like, okay, what do you need me to do? I'm like, nothing, nothing at all. Of course, I had like 16 things that I needed him to do. But I had to be super intentional about that and about realizing I have to slow down and take care of the people around me. And it's not going to be easy for people that are highly driven to do that. So you have to intend to celebrate people. Right now, I have an assistant that tells me at the beginning of every month when everyone's birthday is, and we have it systemized so that their chair gets decorated. We bring in a birthday cake for them. We do whatever it takes to make sure that they feel valued. That is not natural for me. I do that on purpose to make sure that people are being taken care of.
That's great. What's the final advice that you'd want to share with people as they're looking into leverage right now in today's market and just, yeah, I don't know, just leading a great team?
Yeah. Here's what I would say. If you're looking, whether it's building my company or building my team, I have built it around people and who I've discovered. So I think the biggest thing is to always be watching for talent, because talent will show up in areas that you're not expecting. For example, you go through a drive-thru and that person's inordinately friendly. Like, they didn't even have to be friendly. I will literally give them my card and say, if you're looking for an opportunity, give me a call. I am always looking, because I'll tell you what, y'all have a lot of friends. So if you're not hiring for yourself, you better hire talent for somebody else.
There's a lot of talent out there. Tony, thank you for sharing with us today. I appreciate it. It was really good stuff. Thanks so much.
Good job. Thanks.
Thank you, Tony, so much for going deep with us and sharing what you've done well, where you've made mistakes, so that we can avoid those mistakes and do good things. So now your move is simple. Pick one or two of these leverage mistakes that you recognize in your own business and pick a specific change you're going to make this week. Maybe you got to clean up a hire or build your bench or tighten on the follow-up or adjust how you lead your people. Leverage is how you protect your energy and how you scale the business. I trust it was of value to you. Thanks for sticking around. You know, if you like what we do, I'd love for you to hang out with us more. We do our mastermind call every single weekday morning inside the Pivot Shift Ahead Facebook group. You can join us on Zoom or on Facebook. If you want to join on Zoom, go to James D. Shaw and click join our free daily call. We have a ton of Wednesday webinar content as well. So if you like these podcasts, go to jamesdshaw.com and click agent interviews or search wherever you're listening to your podcast. And finally, let's connect on the socials at James D. Shaw. Thanks for being here. You got your inspiration. Go put in the perspiration. Bye-bye.